It's me. I'm the problem. It's me. I know last week I said that this week's episode was going to be about food with Tim Coleman of Moving Pictures Film Club, but I forgot that I hadn't yet put out the Valentine's episode, even though it's not Valentine's anymore and even though it's nearly end of February. So I thought that I should really put it out this week. So that is why there is a slight change in programming. But next week will definitely be with my guest, Tim Coleman, and will definitely be about food. So yeah, enjoy this special love-themed episode.
Hello and welcome to the love episode of What a Scream. It may be the end of February nearly, but we're still feeling the love.
We are feeling the love. I'm particularly loved up this week.
Yeah.
As you know, I'm getting married this year and I got my wedding dress. It's very exciting.
That is Ruby Noir, in case you didn't realize. We have just got off the back of recording, aka... Mm. Movies, Murder and Mayhem. So we're one drink in. So well, this is going to be interesting.
Are you also drinking with me?
I am. I just finished a whiskey and the only thing that was left in the studio fridge was a can of Guinness.
Yay.
So I am drinking like an old man right now. So I started with the whiskey and I am onto the Guinness. So
beautiful. Yeah, no, I have the Friday wine cracked open. So it's not allowed anywhere near the box that my wedding dress is in. Not that it matters, because I very specifically did not get a white wedding dress, because I would absolutely spill wine down the front of that motherfucker.
Yes, that's why I also had a red wedding dress. Yeah, I couldn't imagine me in white. That would be disastrous.
Do you know what, though? I did, myself and my bridesmaids, we did go to like a proper bridal shop and I tried on some of the dresses. And here's the thing, I kind of get it now. Like, I'm still really happy with the choice I've made, but I do get they are so well made. You look amazing in all of them, even the ones that are fucking hideous. Like, I tried on one that was full, like, somewhere between Princess Diana's wedding dress and Jennifer Connelly's dress in Labyrinth.
Yeah.
It's like somewhere between those two. And I was like, it was hideous. But oh my God, I was like, Jesus fucking Christ. They're so well, like, the underpinnings are so well done. Like, it was an experience. I did get a little bit emotional.
I never did that because I was obviously in lockdown when we were organising our wedding, so I never got to do that. It does make me a little bit sad. I'm like, oh, I wish I could have done
it. I say just do it anyway. I was trying to convince one of my other bridesmaids because she didn't really have a chance. So she was pregnant when she got married. And so she didn't really have a chance to kind of do the whole shtick. Not just because she was pregnant. There was other stuff going on as well. Yeah. And so I was like, you should do it. She was like, no, this is about you. And I was like, all right, but I'm going to get it out of you. Like, I want to see her in a pretty wedding dress. I was like, you deserve it. You want it more than I do.
Yeah, maybe I should. I'll force Oscar into renewing our vows. At, like, five years.
And then you can go out and have the experience.
Or I get my divorce clause and...
And you get to have wedding number two.
Wedding number two with my divorce clause, who I think I've talked about enough already. If you want to hear me talk about my divorce clause, go listen to the recent episode of Movies.
Listen to and this episode, we're going to talk about my divorce clause, and I'm not even married yet.
I think it's a lot of people's divorce clause.
Yeah.
But I guess us talking about wedding dresses kind of leads nicely on to our first film. So yes, we're talking about love.
Yes, love. Films, horror films about love, which you kind of think, huh? But actually, there's a few out there.
There is. Last year we did a Valentine's episode where we covered Valentine and My Bloody Valentine.
Yeah.
So seeing as they are the only two Valentine's horror films, we were like, right, we're going to have to be a bit more broad this year.
The thing is, there are others, but you've covered a lot of them.
Yes.
Like Love Witch, obviously, I think is a great one.
Yeah.
Rocky Horror Picture Show as well, we've also covered. Yeah. So, you know, there are ones out there because there's always a Rocky Horror Picture Show showing at Valentine's in Dublin as well. So,
yep. Okay. So let's start with the first film, I guess.
Yeah. This was my pick. I was excited to share it because I really enjoyed it. Relatively new film, 2019. Black comedy horror film, Ready or Not. It stars Samara Weaving, Adam Brody, Mark O'Brien, Andy McDowell, returning. Melanie Scrofano, who I particularly love. If anyone else watches Wynonna Earp, it's a weird show, but I fucking love it. and a host of others. So the story is that Samara Weaving, who I think is, you know, she's her and Mia Goth becoming like the scream queens of our era.
What? So was she in the ring?
Samara Weaving.
Or am I getting really confused with someone else? I know she was in The Babysitter.
She was in The Babysitter franchise. No, she's Australian. She's been in a bunch of stuff.
So who was the little girl that played The Ring?
Oh, I've no idea.
Okay, carry on. Sorry.
What happens when you have two people with ADHD hosting a podcast together? Like, ooh, what about this one? No, what are we talking about? Yeah. Ready or not. So
it was Davy Chase. Sorry, completely different person.
So Samara Weaving plays Grace. So she is, it opens on her wedding day. She is going to marry Daniel, who is the child of the incredibly wealthy Le Damas family, who are they own a gaming empire. So it started off with board games about 100 years or so back, and now they own like football teams and like e-gaming empires and all this kind of stuff. Super, super rich. It is made clear, well, it actually opens on a something else, but it is made clear fairly quickly that these people are incredibly snobbish, and Grace is not, does not come from a wealthy background at all. We're introduced to the various family members. Daniel's alcoholic brother, played by Adam Brody, his incredibly snobby wife, his Daniel's sister, who is Melanie Scarfano, who is a cocaine head, very obviously so. and so they get married, fine, and it is there. She's told then that the tradition in the family is that every new addition to the family, anyone who marries in, has to pull a card from this puzzle box that was given to their great great grandfather, Mr. LeBale, which I spent the entire movie thinking that they were saying his name in a weird southern accent, like Mr. LeBale, but like Mr. Yeah. LeBale, like like Daniel Craig in the Glass Onion movie, in the Knives Out movies, but no, it's LeBale, B-A-I-L.
Okay,
hey. Yeah. I was like, oh wow, I just went wildly off into a like an accent corner there. Anyway, so this box was given to the family by Mr. LeBale, who their great grandfather had gambled with for the startup funds to start their gaming empire. And you know, they have to draw a card, and on the card is a game, and they have to play that game. It could be anything. It could be checkers. It could be any. So Grace draws hide and seek, and everyone looks at each other as if something terrible is going to happen, because it is. So they send her off to go hide, and she climbs into a dumb waiter to hide. And she's like, what the fuck? This is so stupid, because she hasn't been told that hide and seek is the one game where if they pull it, the family will then, they all take various different weapons from crossbows to shotguns, and they try and hunt her down and kill her. Because as it turns out, Mr. LeBale is the agent of, is an agent of the devil, or at least that's what everyone assumes. And they family are Satan worshippers, and that's how they've kept held on to their fortune for so long. They believe that if they do not sacrifice this woman before sunrise, that some sort of retribution will be claimed by the devil. And so the movie is basically her just getting away from them, and various hijinks of people trying to kill her, not killing her, other people getting killed. Obviously, she's scrappy, which is fun. And there is kind of a question throughout the movie until the very, very end as to whether this family, there actually is some supernatural nonsense going on, or whether it's these people are just insane. They're, you know, they're just the conspiracy theory that a lot of people have been shouting about for a long time. Baby-eating Satan worshippers.
Yeah.
There's some very fun, I think it's a really, really fun like horror comedy. Like the cocaine head sister keeps accidentally killing other staff members because she can't control herself. There's like her husband who's married in, like he's given a crossbow and he doesn't know how to use it, so he spends half the film like locked in another room looking up like YouTube videos on how to operate his crossbow. Lots of nonsense like that. It's very silly. It's the perfect length. It's only an hour and a half. There's some good one-liners. There's some good like comedy violence, I think. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a fun kind of schlocky horror comedy. I think it was definitely in the first wave of what is the very current Eat the Rich like trend of movies. Like, you know, you've got like, you know, Triangle of Sadness and The Menu. They're not all necessarily horror, but there is this very much this Eat the Rich push in movies at the moment. I think this was kind of very much at the beginning of that.
Yeah.
I think as well, this was one of the last things I saw in the cinema. Not the last thing, but one of the last things I saw in the cinema before lockdown.
Okay. So just before we get into it, Samara is the girl from The Ring. Like, that's the character. And that's why
the character's name, yes.
That's why I was getting confused with Samara Weaving. Who is she? Hugo Weaving's daughter?
Oh, that's a very good question. Let's find out.
Is she a Nepo baby?
She absolutely is a Nepo baby, yeah. Hugo Weaving is her uncle.
Oh, her uncle, okay. Of course, the good family Weaving.
Yeah, you can actually, like, when you look at them, it's like you can see it in the eyes.
Yeah, actually, and the forehead. Yeah. As well. Yeah. So, ready or not, before we came
tell me
on,
how much you hated it.
You know what? I didn't hate it as much as I thought I was going to hate it. But what I think that was is, God, when did I watch this? Wednesday. What happened? Something had happened Wednesday. I was really tired and I just needed something that was like straight. You know, something I didn't have to dissect, basically, and go into a deep dive about and have to think about symbology and all this stuff.
Oh, no, none of that nonsense.
No, it was just straightforward. It was an enjoyable romp. As you said, an hour and a half long. I do like my 90 minutes straight up films.
Yeah,
I thought it was okay. Like, it was definitely... I wouldn't watch it again unless I was being forced to. I enjoyed the gore. I really like, there's a point where one of the little boys shoots her in the hand and she's got a hole in her hand and she falls into the pit.
Oh, the pit full of dead goats, yeah.
Yeah, and she has to drag herself out by putting her hand onto a nail.
I had forgotten that, and both myself and my partner just went, oh! We were like, oh no, that's awful.
And to be fair, I did really enjoy the ending.
Yes, as did I. So I suppose spoilers, if you want to avoid them, clock off now. But so the end is that the devil does come for their souls and everyone explodes. And it's really funny.
It is.
And the bit where she just starts cackling maniacally at them. Because one of the things that does go through it is like, is the husband, her newlywed husband, because he initially tries to help get her out.
Yeah.
But it kind of goes back and forth. Like, is he going to eventually turn and sacrifice her to Satan in order to keep his family's wealth? And he does. And it's very funny.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually really enjoyed his character because of that slight ambiguity about his kind of morality. Mm. And especially because he had walked away from his family, it was like, will he be affected by this curse, this, you know, pact with the devil? And he's the last one to go. And he turns into this sniveling, horrible, like, white boy.
It is very satisfying.
Yeah. And then he's like, look, it didn't happen to me. We can go back to being, you know, happily married couple. And then when he explodes and she bursts into laughter, it was a purely a good for her moment.
It was. And then like the last shot of her like sitting smoking on the steps, and like it is a great final line when someone comes up and goes, what the fuck happened to you? And she just goes, ugh, in-laws. There's a lot of very like satisfying moments in it. Like there's a bit as well where she's like, she's torn up her, so she's changed out of her shoes, she's in like these yellow cons, and she's like torn off her wedding dress. The camera pans up and she looks fucking awesome. And she just goes, what the fuck? Which is like, it's very funny to me at least, because it is that kind of like the, you know, the text is her going, Jesus Christ, I look a mess, but obviously the camera is going, look how awesome she looks.
Yeah So as you kind of alluded to, the subtext, there's not much of it, but obviously it's kind of a commentary on the rich, especially the old kind of rich and their feelings of being untouchable.
Yes.
So what did you think of this commentary and expanding in?
I mean, I think back in 2019, when I first watched it, I thought it was a little bit silly and maybe not the, you know, a bit of a hyperbolic maybe. I think now I feel a bit more on the side of the movie. I think, yeah, it's like this idea that, you know, people are willing to sacrifice anything. And like the characters, you know, it's not subtext, it is text. Like one of the characters, Adam Brody's wife, she literally says, I will do anything to not have to give up what I have. And I think that's interesting. It's like, once you get to a certain point, like, how awful is it to lose all of that? And it's like, you know, because like realistically, you know, they're so mega rich, even if they lost everything tomorrow, like they'd still be fine. And that's, but people are still are clawing onto that, like that, those hordes of wealth, like dragon style piles of gold. Because they're like, oh, I couldn't possibly survive without my several billions. Jesus Christ, 5,000 euros would change my fucking life. And, you know, so I do think it's interesting from that point of view. It's like just more, you know, less, you know, obviously it's a condemnation of that attitude, but also it's the fact that people are, I think, are absolutely willing to do anything to hang on to that.
Mm. One thing I thought was interesting was of the character of her husband, that no matter what, you'll always be a sniffling rich boy. Like, yeah, no matter how hard you try and change, you're never going to get away from your family and the fact that you were brought up in privilege and you're afforded certain things and the ability to get away with certain things because you come from a rich white family.
Yeah, and there is a moment as well, because the thing is, like, he could have, like, there is that question of if he had not been willing to sacrifice his wife because he genuinely did love her, it was all to do with love, it was nothing to do with money and power, would he have been spared? Like, I think that question is still there in the movie. Like, he might have been. It might have been a case of, oh, you know what, you were a genuinely good dude, so you get a pass. But nope. Like, he fell back into his old habits with his family and it got him exploded.
But was there a question that he was ever going to be, like, he was ever going to change because he brought her into the family? He could have just been like, look, I don't like my family, let's run away and elope. Like,
yeah. And that was addressed in that, like, they kind of say, it's like, oh, well, if you really didn't believe in Mr. LaBelle and what's going on, then you wouldn't have brought her home in the first place. So, yeah. So, I mean, I think it is, there is a question there, but obviously all of the foreshadowing is that he's going to turn on her. And it's the opposite with the brother, obviously, Adam Brody's character, who I did enjoy, because he is so disgusted with himself, but he can't, like, he feels like he can't deviate from the path that's been written for him. And then he does at the very, very end, and that's very nice for him. And that's kind of, again, that's kind of foreshadowed. There's nothing particularly surprising in any of this, but
yeah, I felt bad for his character. I wish, obviously, he didn't explode.
He got killed first. Yeah.
But yeah, I felt really bad for his character. I was like, no.
I wonder if that means he didn't go to hell, though, because he didn't explode.
Maybe. The only thing I will say about it, when we get the glimpse of Mr. LaBelle, I was like, ugh, are you serious?
No, it was pretty, it's pretty cheesy. It is. Yeah. But I mean, I think I will say one thing, it's though, at least they didn't explode the children on screen. Like, they did have that, they exploded off screen.
I was wondering, I was like, are they going to explode the children? I kind of wish they had done it on
screen. They did. Oh, he punched that child in the face, though, and it was very funny. I was like, oh, I wanted to do that so many times.
Yes, I did like it. It was, you know, a good fun film.
Yeah.
For what it was.
No, look, it's not particularly deep or meaningful. It's, you know, there's it's got a point to make, but it's not shy about making it. There's no great subtext here, but I think it's solid performances all around, good fun gore, and excellent use of crossbows.
Yeah. We do like a good crossbow in this podcast.
Yeah, the where they shot it actually was this heritage house in Canada.
Okay.
And so, like, most of the stuff that's there is just there. They weren't allowed, like, touch anything, which I think is very fun. That place exists somewhere.
Yeah. So, yeah, I, like, would you recommend it to horror fans?
Yeah, and I think it's as well, it's probably one of those ones that, like, if you're not a huge horror fan but you're trying to, like, dip your toe into the genre, it's probably a good one, because it's not scary in any way. There is one that bit with the hand is probably the most extreme bit of gore, and it is like kind of, oh god, no, but it's not awful by any standards. There is some minor decapitations and things through eyeballs. I have to say, the woman who plays the aunt, the very serious aunt, what's her name? Because Andie MacDowell is great. Andie MacDowell is always great. Helene. So Nikki Gaudagni. Sorry. Nikki Gaudagni. She's amazing. Like, I've such a severe visage.
She ate it up.
She did. I mean, I always like watching a movie where everyone's clearly having a lot of fun being quite silly. And that's very much this. There's the guy who plays the butler as well. He's very good.
Yeah, I did like the aunt, mainly because of just the way she looked. She just looked very Vivian Westwood.
Yeah, she looked like he cut herself on any bit of her.
Yeah.
Her hair, her cheekbones, her nose, like, oh yeah, you'd get a paper cut off her. But yeah, no, it's a good, would you recommend it to people?
Yeah, I think if you're looking for something that's just a bit kind of brainless, and I don't mean that in like an insulting way, I just mean like, you know, if you're not in the mood for something heavy, or
because the next film we're going to talk about is such an intellectual powerhouse.
It is so intellectual, and it is a film of scholars, and so yes, this next film of scholars and gentlemen. You know what, I had a really, like, because I was covering quite a lot of heavy films this week, and when I got round to like our films, it was just really nice to have like a breath of kind of fresh air. Yeah. And not to have to deal with too much trauma.
A breath of nonsense, yeah.
Exactly. So the film that I chose is The Incredible Bride of Chucky, from 1998, written by Don Mancini and directed by Ronnie Yu. Yeah. It's the fourth film in the Child's Play franchise.
I couldn't believe that. In my head, it was definitely the second one.
You just skipped over two.
Skipped over two and three.
Yeah. It was definitely the film where it started to get like comedy.
Yes.
You know, they were treading very lightly on the comedy in the first couple, or it was, you know, not meant to be comedic. But this one, they played right into it.
They did. And it is very funny.
It's hilarious, and I love it. So it stars Jennifer Tilly, Brad Dourif returns as the voice of Chucky, John Ritter, Katherine Heigl, and Nick Stiebel, or Stabile. So it is set in 1998, and we see Tiffany, who is the former lover of Charles Lee Ray, and she organises for a cop to steal the doll of Chucky. And when she gets it, she decides she's going to do some voodoo and bring him back to life. And she does. And he then ends up killing her and accidentally putting her into a doll. And so thus she becomes the bride of Chucky.
Is that an accident? I always took that to be on purpose.
Or maybe it was on purpose.
It doesn't really matter. But I was like, oh, did I miss a really key plot point?
Because she locks him into a playpen and taunts him with this doll that's dressed up as like a bride, and then he escapes by and electrocutes her in the tub. Yeah, and then he puts her soul into the bride doll, of course.
It's the bride doll, yeah.
And then they are trying to get this amulet that will help them resurrect their bodies.
Yeah, they jump their souls into other people's bodies. Yeah. That's a bit wishy-washy, let's face it.
Yeah, that wasn't, you know, the plot isn't the main thing about this film. So they have to get to this cemetery where Charles Lee Ray is buried, and so they enlist the help of Tiffany's neighbour and his girlfriend. Yes, and hijinks ensue.
Hijinks ensue. Can we just say as well, like, Katherine Heigl has not aged a fucking day in her life.
She really hasn't.
She was born 21 and she stayed that age for forever. I watched a bunch of Grey's Anatomy there in the last year or so, and she looks exactly the fucking same.
How old is she now? Yeah, she does actually look exactly the same. I'm just looking at photos of her. She's 44 now and she still looks...
Jesus Christ, that's them some good jeans.
Very good jeans. So yeah, what do you think of Bride of Chucky?
Listen, as I said to you before we started recording, I would follow Jennifer Tilly into the depths of hell. I love her so much. She is one of my divorce clauses. And yeah, it's just really fun. Like, I was never a massive fan of the Child's Play franchise. Not that I thought it was bad or anything, but it wasn't one of those ones that I was like, oh my God, yeah, my fave. But this movie is fucking great. And I think it's because, like, let's face it, I am a fan of, like, the comedy horror end of things, stuff that's a bit more tongue-in-cheek. And I think this is one of the first of those, like, the Child's Play movies are inherently ridiculous. And this is kind of the first of those films to go, we know it's a bit stupid, and we're going to lean into it and have fun with it in a really smart and clever way as well. Like, it's not just, dolls. Like, it's very meta. Before meta was as much of a thing.
Yeah. I, like yourself, I was never really into Child's Play. I was kind of like, oh, how scary can a child's doll be, really? And then kind of, I never bothered with it until the series actually came out. And I think I had watched Bride of Chucky, Seed of Chucky and all that, and it never really bothered me. But then I watched the series like 2 years ago, and I just thought it was the funniest fucking thing ever. And now going back to Bride of Chucky, it's such a good, like, it connects it all so well.
Yeah. I watched the remake relatively recently. I say relatively recently, like, recently for me now is in the last 2 years. Because what is time? And I was really disappointed because I was so looking forward to it, because I love Mark Hamill is one of the greatest gifts to voice acting that we have ever been given. And he did a great job. But again, it just went back to very kind of self-serious. It was really boring.
It's just
my biggest issue with it. And I was just very disappointed.
Yeah, I think like Nightmare on Elm Street, you can't have that without Robert Englund. That you just cannot have a Chucky film without Brad Dourif.
Yeah, I actually thought Mark Hamill was probably the best thing in it, to be fair. You know, he is the greatest Joker ever. Bite me, nerds. I think more so is that you have people trying to reboot these franchises like Nightmare, like Child's Play, where they've kind of transcended themselves in a way, and they became really comedic, and they're not, you can't get away from the joke of them anymore, you know. Like Nightmare on Elm Street was always a bit schlocky and a bit in on the jokes, and so when you try to remake that and make it a bit more serious, then it's not gonna work. And then Child's Play got, you know, to the point where, like, I was listening to a retrospective on the Titanic recently. I know it sounds like a weird thing, but it's like, you know, you can't judge Titanic on its actual goodness anymore, because it's been memeified and, you know, made into a joke for so long that it's almost impossible to go, is it good? Or, like, you know, you can't just watch it and appreciate it for what it is, because it's impossible. You can't divorce it. And I think the Child's Play is the same. And a lot of these franchises are. So I think this movie was the first one to go, okay, well, it's become this thing. What are we going to do with that? And how can we work within it to make it good, as opposed to trying to make it stupid again?
Yeah. I think bringing in Jennifer Tilly as Tiffany was just a work of genius. Like, she absolutely is my favorite. She was my favorite thing about the series. I haven't seen the second series yet. I've been too busy with Last of Us.
I'm waiting for the Renaissance, because everyone is really getting their Jennifer Coolidge judge on at the moment. She is quite rightly having her Renaissance. So the Tillissance is coming, I feel. I think she's going to be the next one to, like, everyone's going to go, oh, hey, she's a fucking treasure and we forgot about her for 20 years.
I need a show where Jennifer Coolidge, Jennifer Tilly and Pamela Anderson all play sisters.
Oh my God. That is casting genius.
Right? I think it would be a gem of a show.
Just circles of people going, wow.
I really need it.
I don't know. With producers that listen to this show, you can have that one free of charge. We won't come after you.
Yeah. I love Jennifer Tilly. She's every goth girl's dream of, like, how they want to look.
Yeah. Oh, in this movie, like, dear God, she's hot. Now, look, Bound is the pinnacle. Like, if you're sitting out there and you're like, Bound? What the fuck is Bound? Go watch Bound. It's the Wachowskis, like freshman effort. Basically, they were given some money to make Bound. They had to make Bound on, like, a dime in order to get the money for The Matrix. And it's incredible. it is, yeah, lesbian icon status. Yeah, it's great. Go watch it. Very good.
So yeah, I just love Jennifer Tilly in this, that she's really like, she just wants to be loved. Like, she just really loves love, and you know, she's all about just giving herself over to this man or doll.
She also loves murder.
She's such a psychopath, and I fucking love it. And one of my favorite lines is where they're discussing Martha Stewart, and Chucky is like, Martha Stewart, who the fuck is it? She's like, Martha Stewart's my icon. Like, I know. And I just love it. I love it.
Oh, I think she's great.
Yeah.
What would Martha Stewart do?
Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing.
And I love when they do the doll makeover as well.
Oh god, the doll makeover. I know, I love the fact that she completely changes her hairstyle and color, and that bit they do not address. Like, they show the doll like painting her nails and her makeup, but then just like completely new hair. I was like, did you reroute that entire head in the last 25 minutes? Like, fuck no. I want to see why this happened. Did you get out some peroxide and use it on like fucking nylon hair? I have questions that must be answered.
So then we've got this side plot of Katherine Heigl and her boyfriend. Katherine Heigl lives with her uncle, played by Ritter, who is fantastic in this role. He's so good at playing creepy characters.
John Ritter, I love him so much.
So, like, I loved him as Ted in Buffy.
Yes. Oh, so good as Ted.
Yeah. He was so creepy. And he's really good as, like, the creepy uncle in this as well, the creepy controlling uncle.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting that he is both America's dad and America's creepy uncle. like, that is a skill set that he had. And he was a great loss when he died. Anyway, he's fantastic in this. And he has a wonderful pre-death moment as well, which is great.
I love his pre-death and his death. Just the nails to the face.
Yeah.
And being, like, shoved in the bench of the van.
Yeah, and then, like, waking up. I love the, like, thought process behind that. It's like, okay, you're stuffed in a bench, you've got nails in your face, you've just been almost murdered by a pair of dolls, and then you wake up in complete darkness. Go.
I loved it. It's just, I mean, like we said before, there's barely any plot to this. There's really not.
Oh god, no. It's mostly a road trip movie if you think about it. I will say this, like, Katherine Heigl and her boyfriend and their gay friend, actually, it's a really fun little subplot, because there is a point where they all think the other one is guilty of murder.
Yeah.
And like that, which is very funny to watch. The bit where they get married and they're both like side-eyeing each other like, Jesus Christ, what am I doing? I'm like, ooh, romantic.
Much romance. And then one of my favorite scenes is when they're in the motel and there's that other couple that have, and they've got these like waterbeds with mirrors on the ceiling.
The noise of the waterbeds is so disgusting.
Yeah.
And like,
how
you can tell,
you sleep on one?
Some Foley artist had a great fun with that. Because I'm almost entirely sure that's not the noise that they would make.
I just don't understand how people can sleep on them. They look so like getting like seasick.
I just, like, there's no support in them. And what happens if you spring a leak or your overbed mirror shatters and murders you? Also, surprise Kathy and Jimmy.
Right? I loved her when she turned up. I was like, oh my god.
Surprise Kathy and Jimmy actually steal the scene there. I think she's the only one in the scene, I grant you, but she's so funny. Like, I love how much she's committed to this one scene. I can't believe that you were given the one scene role of a fucking, like, maid. I really hope you did this as a favor, because you deserve more, Kathy.
I deserve so much more. And then they get to the graveyard where they're meant to go. Or then they discover that there is two dolls on the rampage with them, as you do. They get to the graveyard, and that is when everything goes down. And it's so funny, because poor Tiffany gets like burned and is turning into like this hideous doll. Chucky gets killed and shot, and he's in the grave of Charles Lee Ray. And it's so funny, because the police detective shows up and goes, oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, this detective. Now, was he in the previous movies and I've just blocked them out?
Oh, I don't know.
I wonder if that's a thing that's actually like he is aware of what's going on. Because he might very much seemed like he was like, oh, yeah, no, I've been on this case for a while. I believe you. And he's like, you guys go home and I'll sort it out with everyone else. But yeah, I mean, like, look, what happens at the end, though, is also it's very important to mention the doll sex scene. So,
oh, my God. Fucking
go screw yourself, Team America. Bride of Chucky was doing it a while beforehand. It's so funny. And the fact that they plant the, like, there's like, oh, you don't have a condom. And he's like, but I'm a fucking doll. What's it going to matter?
I made a fucking rubber tiff. Yeah. It is, like, there's this whole discourse on Twitter at the moment. Gen Zers are like, there shouldn't be so much sex in films. They're very, and they think that they should bring back, this has been a discussion, they think they should bring back the Hays Code. Which makes me realise that these Gen Zers don't actually know what the Hays Code is.
They really don't. I think what they want back is like the like fade to black or like cut to a crackling fireplace. Which is like, you know, fine. Like, movie sex is always a bit weird. Because it never looks like actual sex, because it's not. But the Hays, like, they do not know what the Hays Code is. They want to bring it back. It's like, oh, separate beds, one foot on the floor, homosexuals must die. That's what you want. You people who will cancel anyone for anything.
Right?
Not that I actually believe in cancel culture, but like, come on.
So there's been this whole discourse about this, and it was so funny because, you know, it's been all over my Twitter timeline. I haven't really engaged in it. And then when I was watching Bride of Chucky and this turned up. But this scene happened and I had to, like, get a screenshot and be like, you know, all these Puritans that don't want sex in film, well, we wouldn't get such great films such as this.
Such as Bride of Chucky, this, like, cinematic masterpiece. It's like all the plumbing is work. Yeah, because she starts crying and she's like, does all the other plumbing work?
Yeah.
Like, Jesus fucking Christ, is this about to happen? And then it does. Mostly in silhouette. I will give them that.
But we
do get, like, full doll butt.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It is easily my favorite scene of the whole film. It's
very which funny.
Leads us on to the one of the final, if not, yeah, it's the yeah, final scene. Moment. Yeah, yeah. Where...
Which is the ultimate indignity for poor Tiffany.
Tiffany gives birth
to a demon doll baby that has, like, knife teeth.
Yeah.
Sorry, got overexcited with me wine.
But it's so disgusting. It's like this little doll creature comes out of poor Tiffany.
I know. And then she dies. And then, like, but it's the fifth scene in this movie, which is just a succession of shots of two characters screaming at each other for about 25 seconds. It's very good. Oh. It's a very good movie.
It's a cinematic masterpiece. And I need to go watch Seed of Chucky again. Because I haven't seen that for a long time. Because
that's the sequel to Bride of Chucky. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I haven't. I'm actually not sure if I've ever seen that. You know, sometimes when it comes to, like, classic franchises and some of it, it'll just kind of mushes up in your brain.
Yeah, it's a clear classic.
I will, yeah, I must check it out.
I adore this film. I would recommend it. I know a lot of people will be like, especially when you get these kind of horror people that are like, it's not horror. You know, like, they very poo-poo things that aren't.
Yeah.
Which I'm not a horror comedy person, but I just love this. I think it's hilarious.
Yeah. Oh, no, it is. It's very, very funny. And I love a self-aware movie as well. Like, it knows exactly what it is and it makes no bones about it. Which is, you know, my preference in these things. You know, just own up to what you are. And I think, like, you know, I don't think that they kind of are on the same level, but I think Ready or Not is the same. Like, it's not, there's no pretense as to what it is. It's just like, it's going to have fun and it's going to be silly. And that's that.
Yeah. You know, it was really funny, actually, because I was watching Bride of Chucky on my laptop while Nate's been off for his midterm. And he came for a cuddle and I was watching it. And he just looked at it and he was like, what's that doll doing? I was like, that's Chucky. And he was like, okay, cool. And it was just like, all right.
And Nate has a very different, like, context for a lot of this stuff than a normal child would. Not a normal child, that's a bad phrase. But you know what I mean. A child that hasn't been raised in a horror household.
So he went to see the second Puss in Boots last week with Oscar.
He was like, not enough gore.
So there's a wolf in it. And he got very scared by the wolf because the wolf was, like, attacking the cats. And Nate is a massive cat lover. He adores cats, and he got so upset that he had to leave. Oh. He was so scared of this wolf barking at the cats or howling at the cats. Oh,
bless him.
Yeah, so it's really funny. Like, he'll sit there, like, he'll sit there and he'll see a monster of what I'm watching and just be like, do-do-do-do-do, but as soon as he sees, like, anything barking, like, in the Secret Life of Pets, he hates that film because the big dog barks at the cats.
I think I can relate real hard to Nate on this, though. We watched Sandman.
Yeah.
So, you know the extra, the two bonus episodes, you know the animated one.
Yeah.
I love Sandman. I thought it was great. I was a big fan of the comics. I thought they updated it perfectly. I really enjoyed it. That upset me so much. There's a scene in one of the two extra bonus episodes in which a man goes and dumps a bag full of kittens in a river and they all die. And I was so upset. I was sobbing. Like, I was not prepared for it. I was not in the right headspace. And my poor partner was like, Jesus fucking Christ, I have to take you back to therapy. But not deal. I didn't know it was coming either. Because, like, I will happily watch a movie where people get their heads chopped off and get, like, arrows shot through their eyes and get disemboweled by dumbwaiters and all sorts of other weird shit. But suddenly you have, like, animal violence. It actually very much upsets me. So, like, I think everyone has their thing.
Poor Nate, he loves his cats at the moment. I don't know if you've ever seen The Grudge or Ju-on The Grudge, but you know the little kid Toshio, he like yowls like a cat. Nate does that, and he hisses like a cat. Like, we walked past a dog today and it started barking at him and he was like he kept like hissing at this dog, and I was just like, oh my god, you have to stop watching these cat videos on YouTube.
Oh, bless him. Yeah, no, I do the you know, like the clicky throat thing from The Grudge to creep people out. Yeah. They hate it. It's fun. The Grudge is just a terrible film. I love watching it.
I love it.
Ju-on is great, but like The Grudge is awful.
But I still like it the same time. I prefer it over the going back to The Ring. Circling around like a cycle. Circling
right back to The Ring, like going the weird ADHD people we are.
I prefer it. I prefer the remake of The Grudge than I do the remake of The Ring.
I mean, it's definitely more fun. I watch it with the riff tracks, with the like comedy commentary. This is very funny.
So yes, out of the two films then, back to the subject at hand, out of the two films, which one would you recommend for a Valentine's viewing?
It's a Sophie's choice. No, obviously Bride of Chucky. Though I like Ready or Not more than you do. Like, this is the second time I've seen it, and I did still enjoy it the second time around. It's not like a regular rewatch, but when it's been long enough that you forget how it ends, that's when you watch it again.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Bride of Chucky just because.
Yeah, I think they're both really fun. So it depends on your... I think it depends on your style of comedy. I think Bride of Chucky is a bit more lewd and crude.
Yeah.
But it is very, very funny. Also Jennifer Tilly.
Yeah, but Jennifer Tilly.
But Jennifer Tilly at all times.
Yeah. So can you recommend any other love films? Films, should I say?
Not off the top of my head. I mean, obviously, we talked about a few already. Like the Love Witch, the Valentine's movies that we... I can just recommend some like legit romantic comedies, but I don't think that's what you're looking for.
Horrific in their own right.
Hey! I'm allowed to watch more than one kind of thing. I'm even like just looking like if I Google like love horror films, I'm like looking at these, I'm like, I don't know any fucking these. And some of them, I'm like, A Quiet Place, is that? Kind of, I guess.
I mean, there's a couple in it. I would go with vampire films. I think they're very...
Vampire films are often, yes. Only Lovers Left Alive, Interview with a Vampire.
Twilight.
Yeah. Twilight. Let the Right One In.
You know what I feel we should do? I feel like we should do a couple of episodes on Twilight for the crack.
I would fucking love that because I was not anything like you would call a twihard, but I read all those books more than once and I have seen the movies.
I have not read the books. I have seen the movies because they contained Jackson Rathbone. And he was my bae back in the day.
He was young Egrain Bey.
He was. I loved his band, and I went all the way to London to see his band. And there was they did a signing afterwards, and everyone there wanted him to sign like DVDs of Twilight. And I was the only person there that was like, "Can you sign your CD for me?" But he was just like, "Hey, where are you from?" And I was like, "Ireland." And he goes, "Oh, cool, you too." And I was like, "Ooh,
we have at least two other bands."
But yeah, he was my bae.
I can definitely see that. I feel bad for him though, that when I Google him, the second photo that comes up is still a Twilight photo.
Yeah, that's all he's ever going to be. Although I think he's coming out with a new film soon.
Good for him. There was one of the other Cullen family. I can't remember his name, the character or the actor. He was the jacked one.
Emmett.
Yes.
I'm sad that I know that.
I'm not going to lie, I read a lot of fan fiction. That was probably the best place I knew it, because let's face it, half of it was better than the actual books or movies. Because all of these characters are ciphers. None of them are actual real people. he shows up in random stuff, and I always end up staring at him going, "Who the fuck are you? Where do I know you from?" And it's two places. One of them's Twilight, and the other one is... he is the main love interest in the cinematic masterpiece that is Burlesque, starring Cher and Christina Aguilera.
No way.
Yeah. Helen Lutz, that's the man.
Yes.
I would fucking love to do a Twilight special with you. A series, I feel. At least two, if not three episodes.
I feel like we're gonna have to do it just for the crack, like,
yeah. I think we're gonna have to do it though. This is not gonna be like we go away. I think we have to sit down together and have like a Twilight marathon. I think maybe we're gonna have to get a room in a spa hotel somewhere. It's gonna have to be a whole thing.
Right. Okay,
let's kind of watch all the Twilight movies without the riff tracks then.
I feel like this is going to be our own hen's party just for you and me.
before you
get married. I'm like, look, I'll come to your main one if I'm invited, but I've organized this for you.
Jesus Christ.
Well, just in case, you know.
Just in case. we'll have to do something proper for it, I feel.
Yeah.
We'll end up with one of those, you know, like a big whiteboard with like string on it and shit.
I just, you know what it is, actually, someone, one of my horror friends, Caitlin, she said she'd never watch Twilight. And I was like, you have to watch the scene just for when they meet each other in the science lab.
Oh, it's so funny.
That scene is the funniest scene. Have you heard, like, what is it called? Bad lip syncs or badly synced?
Oh, yeah, bad lip syncs. But
they
also
do that scene.
They do that scene, but also the Riff Tracks version, which I will have to send to you. So Riff Tracks did you ever hear of Mystery Science Theater 3000?
No.
So this was basically a bunch of Canadian stoners back in the 90s used to watch like B movies from the 50s through the 80s that were like out of copyright, and they would just riff over them. And so that ended. This is the whole thing. That ended, and the same guys started doing riff tracks. So you would download the audio track by itself and sync it up to the movie, and their Twilight one is so fucking funny.
Okay.
Oh, it's like, trust me on this. I'll send you a clip.
Okay. That went off. That went off.
That's the end of this movie, this episode. Jesus Christ, can you tell we've had a drink?
You know what, we went through such a hard recording of
was a double bummer this week. So this is our letting off steam. Also, we've been recording for like over 2 hours now, so gone crazy.
Yes.
And this is why you're a award-nominated podcast.
If only they could see me now.
Listen to the end of this episode and be like, oh no.
Oh no, thank you.
No. Oh no, thank you. We don't want to be associated with that. I apologize. I'm sorry. All my fault.
Take it away from her, quick.
Oh my God, press stop, for the love of God.
Oh, I'm gonna have to do all the you know, follow us and do all that.
Mm-hmm.
Stay horrific, I guess. Stay horrific, Twihards. Okay, I've got to stop because I'm actually going to pee myself. professional.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, that was our love episode. That was our love episode. Follow us on Twitter. Ruby, where can they find you on Twitter?
You can find me at the Ruby Noir and all the places that count.
Okay. So yeah, don't forget to follow and subscribe if you want more. If you want more of this gold.
How do we not have awards already? That's the question that I'm asking myself right now.
I feel like we should make our own award.
I can do that. I got a hot glue going around here somewhere.
Okay, well, stay horrific.